Many years ago, there was a certain magazine, which I guess for the moment will remain nameless. It was a magazine is no longer published, hasn't been published for many, many years. It was a magazine that was a Jewish magazine put out under Jewish auspices, but it wasn't run by frum people. The editor-in-chief was not somebody who was from, it wasn't run by frum people, it was meant for general Jewish topics. And they used to have a column at the beginning of the magazine, an opening page, which was like interesting things. They used to take some interesting pictures of things, etc., and write some comments. Well, one time, they had a picture of a hardware store, possibly in Borough Park, I don't know exactly where. This picture of a hardware store, and there was a sign on the hardware store that said, Mikvah on premises. The editors of this, the non-religious editors of this magazine, thought that this thing was a riot. You have a mikvah for people in a hardware store? That's where the people are going to the mikvah? You go in and you say, I'm going to buy a couple of pots and a couple of pans. Excuse me, I'm going to the dressing room and into the mikvah. So they thought this was a riot. And they published that. I remember they had a little blurb. I don't remember exactly what. They had some sort of blurb at the bottom. Like, what will they think of next? They got it over the head next week in the letters to the editor. Because these people had never realized, I mean, they knew there was an idea of people going to the mikvah, but they didn't realize that there was a concept of my hardware supplies going to the mikvah. And that's what we're going to talk about today, a little bit. A little bit about the hardware supplies going to the mikvah. Now, Miri was very kind enough to put up a sign, as she always is, and she was in a good mood yesterday when she put up the sign. There were some nameless administrators of the school who were also in a good mood and were writing various comments on the sign. They seemed to be having a good time. And I was happy with it. There's some reason you guys have to come to Shir Klali. So maybe you think it's going to be, I don't know, a funny Shir Klali. So maybe that's reason to come. But in any event, we're going to talk about some of the halachas of Tevilat Kelev. I want to emphasize from the very beginning, like in everything, we can't talk about everything, and I'm not planning to talk about everything. I'm not talking about most things. We're going to just talk about some of the basics, because it is an issue that you already come across, and Bezat Hashem, you will. Anybody who is ever going to buy dishes and pots and pans, etc., should be aware of what's involved, what's necessary, why we do and what we do. So let's begin. We'll start again. There are my comments on the stender here in the center if you didn't get them yet. We'll begin with source number one. Source number one is the source for the need to be tovel kelim in a mikvah. Towards the end of Chumash Bamidbar, Bnei Yisrael are going to war against Midian. And after the war, they've taken booty, spoils of war from Midian. Vayomer Elazar Kohen, El Anshei HaTzava, source number one, Abim LaMechama, Zot Chukat HaTorah SheTziva Hashem Et Moshe, Achad HaZahav Et HaKesev Et HaNechoshet HaBarzev Et HaBdil Et HaOferet, talking about kelim made from gold and silver and copper and iron and lead and something else, different kinds of metal. Kol Davar SheYavo Ba'esh Tavir Ba'esh V'Taher. Says anything that was used by fire has to be cleansed by fire. And Chazal learned out that there were a few things that were necessary here. One thing is, if you came and you took spoils of war from Midian and you took their pots and pans, they had to be kashered. They had to be kashered in the sense that it had been used for ma'acholot asurot, for non-kosher food, and you had to kasher it. So if used in the fire, you had to kasher it through fire. But then the Torah adds on one word. Kol davar shem pasuk chav gimel, kol davar sheyavu ba'esh v'tavir ba'esh v'taher, and you have to be metaherit. There's an additional thing that needs to be done. And what is that? Ach b'meini dayit chata. You have to purify it by immersing it in meini da, in waters which are acceptable for an ishani da to be tovel in. It means you have to immerse it into something that's considered a kosher mikvah. That's an additional, in addition to kashering it. You've gotten rid of all the machalot asurot that had been in there. You kashered it. But in addition, you have to immerse it into a mikvah, into a kosher mikvah. And what's the reason? So in source number two, the Taz, basically quoting a Yerushalmi, writes, V'tam ha-tevila, k'dei she-yetz'u mitumato shel oved kochavim, l'kdushato shel Yisrael. The halach of tevilas kelim does not apply to a pen, and it doesn't apply to a chair, and it doesn't apply to a table, it doesn't apply to a regular pair of scissors. What does it apply to? What kind of kelim?
Ones that are used for food?
Klei seuda. Kalim that are involved in the meal. And we know that Chazal tell us that Shulchano shel Adam, a person's table where he eats, is dome le mizbeach. Our food has to be holy food. And therefore, if this kli was used or was owned, even if it wasn't used, was owned by a non-Jew, and now is coming into the possession of a Jew, and it's going to be a Jewish Kli Seuda, then it has to be raised to a higher level of Kedusha. And that is done through the immersion in the mikvah. That brings about this higher level of Kedusha, because now it is a Kli Seuda that belongs to a Jew, and therefore we need to immerse it into a mikvah. Parenthetically, of course, we realize that if the kli was made by a Jew and sold by a Jew and bought by a Jew, you don't need to immerse it in a mikvah. We'll come back to that point a little bit later. So what materials, kelim made of what materials require tefillah in a mikvah? So if you paid attention to the pasuk, there were six different materials there. Right? Zav, Kesem, Nechoshes, Barzel, Bedil, and Oferet. And I told you what five of them meant, and sixth one I said I didn't know what it was, but I told you it was a kind of metal. In fact, all six are metal. And in fact, the mitzvah of Tvilat Kelim is Doraita de Rabbanan. Doraita. But Doraita applies only to metal Kelim. Silverware, cutlery. Right? Metal Kelim. Pots and metal pans. It applies midoraita only to metal kelim. Midirabanan is added in a very major category. And what is that?
Clay.
Glass. Take a look at source number three. Vedavka clay matchot, metal kelim. Sorech tvila kedichtiv zahava kasa. Aval kli cheres, what's kli cheres?
Pottery.
Ukli eitz, wood, ein tzarech tvila. V'amnam chachamim tiknu tvila leklei zchuchit. What are klei zchuchit? Glass kelim. Glass kelim need tvila midirabana. And Chazal pointed out that there happens to be a common characteristic between glass and metal. Between a glass kli and a metal kli.
They're both shaped
by fire? Yes, plus, but you see, clay is also shaped by fire.
They both get hot easily when fire touches and then lose their heat easily.
That may be true, but that's not the one that they're pointing out.
Does it handle a high amount of heat? Isn't it really both have a smooth surface so nothing gets stuck?
The characteristic that Chazal point out is that both glass and metal can be refashioned. You put metal back into the heat, right? So you can turn it back into a molten state if it's hot enough and refashion it. You can take glass, and if you put it into high enough heat, it'll get, you ever see glass blowing? Like it's this molten.
Yeah.
So it can be returned to that stage and refashioned. If you take pottery and you put it back into the kiln, you can't refashion. It doesn't go back to being clay. You can't refashion wood. You can't make one shape out of wood and then fashion a different shape out of wood and redo it, and it falls apart and put it back together again. So that's the characteristic that Chazal felt were very important. In any event, metal kelim are chayav in Tvila Doraita, glass midrabanan. In source number 4, he quotes from Moshe Feinstein that metal or glass utensils which are coated with enamel or Teflon or paint require tvila. That's even if there's a coating, but a very, very, very thin coating, it doesn't make a difference. Actually, Teflon is a kind of...
plastic.
It's a kind of plastic, I think. Yeah. So many, many frying pans, bismaneinu, have a Teflon coating. So you might say the part that touches the food isn't metal, it's like a plastic. Because it's so thin, and it's an extremely thin layer, Moshe Feinstein says it doesn't make a difference, and it requires tefillah. There is a big, big discussion about, in source number 5, follow along. He writes, "Ayin b'she'elat Yavetz." That's Rabbi Yaakov Endrin, Chelak Aleph, Siman Samach Zayin. Shekatav de kelim habaim mi medina tayam shenikraim porcelain. What's porcelain?
Porcelain.
There's a big discussion in the poskim what to do with porcelain. Now, how is porcelain made? Why? Basically, what you have here is the porcelain we know is glazed china. You know, its real essence is a kind of pottery made substance, but it is covered with a very, very thin layer of, well, it's a kind of glass. It's a glaze. And therefore, porcelain is very, very smooth. But it's very, very delicate. If it falls, it breaks and smashes. What's the story with porcelain? Pure pottery that's unglazed doesn't require tefillah at all. Real glass requires tefillah midrabanan. What do you do with glazed china? And it's a big discussion amongst the poskim. What to do. There are basically two opinions. What to do with glazed china. Halacha l'maisa, the two opinions. One opinion is, glazed china is pottery. Right? It breaks, it can't be reshaped, it's this. The thin coating is so thin, it's insignificant. It's just like Teflon. Right? We said it was metal with a thin coating. What do we say about the thin coating of Teflon? It's irrelevant, it's metal. So what do you say about the thin glaze on top of the china? It's irrelevant. It's pottery. And you don't have to be tovel. That was Moshe Feinstein's position. China does not require tvila at all. Glazed china, porcelain, no tvila is necessary. Other poskim say there's a bit of a suffix. And when you have a suffix with tvila, what does the halacha tell you to do? Tovel without a bracha. And that is the other opinion. Racha Shulchan and others say that one should tovel china, but without a bracha. So I don't know what you do in your own home, but you should just be aware. There are poskim, gedolei poskim, say no tvila at all is necessary with china. And there are poskim say you should be tovel, you should tovel it, but without a bracha. Here you don't have, I doubt any of you have very fancy china in your kitchens. But you very often will buy a very simple mug, like a coffee mug. And many of the coffee mugs are glazed pottery. And that's the same machloka. Some say it doesn't require tevila at all. And some say it's best to be tovel it, but don't say bracha. Of course, we'll maybe mention a little bit later that if you happen to be tovel other kelim that do require a bracha, so you only have to say one bracha anyway. So first tovel a kli that requires it. Have in mind everything. Okay. You don't have to ask me if you have a Kabbalah not to tovel glaze things. That's fine. To be on the safe side, if it's not such a big tircha, I think it would be a good idea to be somech on. Can I have that for a second? Okay. This is glazed pottery of sorts. So it would be proper to be somech. I recommendation to be tovelit without a bracha, but those who aren't tovelit certainly have gedolei haposkim on whom they can rely. Other things don't require tefillin. Source number 7, gumi. What's gumi? Rubber doesn't require. Niyar. That's a good thing that paper kalim don't require tefillah. Would mess them up a little bit, but there's no need to do it. One of the other things that also, according to the vast majority of poskim, that doesn't require tefillah is plastic. I remember plastic. No one knows how to tovel plastic. And I once saw this Hasidic fellow who once was toveling something made out of plastic. And I asked him, why are you toveling this plastic clee? He said, I don't know. That's what they tell us to do. Later, I found out that the Minchas Yitzchak, who was a big posek. We have a svarim here. The abbezin of the Eder Charedis at the time. He's no longer alive. He thought there was a bit of a suffix about plastic. So he used to recommend toveling plastic. The minhag ha'olam generally is not to tovel plastic. Even misafek, that's the minhag ha'olam. To tovel it. So there is one opinion, but it's considered more of a das yachid.
What about chapami?
We'll get to that, Bezrat Hashem. Okay, so now I just bought myself a sandwich maker. And the sandwich maker is a clay seuda, and there's metal there. So, what do I want to do? I want to tovel my sandwich maker. The only thing is, it says in the instructions very clearly, do not immerse in water. Immersion in water will void the warranty, etc., etc., etc. Even in Hebrew it says, lo ladbil b'mayim. Right. So what do you do? Okay. If anybody didn't sign in the attendance sheet now, they can... Oh, use it over here. Okay. So what do you do? What do you do with a sandwich maker? Or for that matter, with a...
With a coffee,
anything. Now, sometimes you can get away with it. In a toaster oven, there may be something that you can do, depending on how it's made. Because the only parts that you need to tovel are the parts that come in contact with the food. Not in a toaster, but in a toaster oven, very often the food is placed on trays, and those trays are removable. So all you have to tovel is the tray. But I think I once saw one model of a sandwich maker that the inside was actually removable.
Yeah, most of them.
Most of them are? Yeah.
A sandwich maker.
Yeah,
usually they have
two different types of
and different inserts.
So you can take it out. So then it's easy. But not all of them. I think the cheaper models, I once somebody told me, yeah, you can take it out. So I once unscrewed the screw and I started taking out all these wires that were attached to it at the bottom. I said, oh, I don't think this comes out. Right. So if your sandwich maker, if the part that touches the food can be removed, it's simple. You just take that part out and you tovel and you put it back in. But if it can be removed, then what do you do? So there are a number of answers to this problem. There's one opinion amongst the poskim, and although some poskim hold that way, I don't think it's the majority opinion. There's one opinion amongst the poskim is that a kli, which is usable only when it's plugged into the wall and doesn't serve any purpose when it's not plugged into the wall, does not require tevila. Because kol ha-mechubar le-karka ke-karka dami, anything that's connected to the ground is like ground. And it's not a kli, it's like part of the building. And there's one opinion that says that if you plug it straight into the wall, and it only works, it only serves a purpose when it's plugged in, so then it doesn't require tevila. That's one opinion that's found among some of the poskim. There's a second, not an opinion, there are those who disagree with that, and they come up with the following suggestion as to what to do. And that is, I told you that a kli that's made by a Jew, and owned by a Jew, and bought by a Jew, doesn't require tefillah. The problem is that my toaster oven, my sandwich maker was made in China. Not too many Chinese Jews working in the factory. So I have to assume it was made by a non-Jew. So what can I do to my sandwich maker that will create a situation where it won't require tefillah? Take it apart a little bit and then put it back together. Say, if the sandwich maker was dismantled and then put back together again by a Jew, so it was remade. And who was it remade by?
Jew.
A Jew. And if you do that, now it doesn't require tefillah. The Poskim say, though, that the dismantling has to be more than something simple. I can't, like, unscrew one screw and then screw it back in and say, oh, put it back together again. It has to be more substantive. There used to be a guy in my neighborhood who used to do this. People used to bring him all the time. He was a bit of a maven in electronic appliances. So I remember, it wasn't a sandwich maker. It was something else that I brought him. So he unscrewed, you know, the part that says, you know, don't unscrew this thing. So he unscrewed the thing. Then he started taking apart some of the wires. The blue wire, the red wire, the green, the yellow wire. Right? And he used to say to his, so you know what to do? I said, I don't have a clue what to do that. But he knew what to do. So he used to take it apart, unscrew a bunch of wires, and then he used to put it back together again. And then the item does not need any tefillah, because it's now remade by a Jew, and that's a suggestion of Shlomo Zalman Auerbach said to do with appliances. There's a third thing that you can do, and I've done it in the past, and I take absolutely no responsibility for this. But I've never had a problem. And that is, you take your sandwich maker and you immerse it in the mikveh. Now, what? You take the sandwich maker and immerse it in the mikveh.
Like the plug part.
Yeah. Now, the plug is the least important thing. It's the part that where the wires are in there. Now, why do they tell you not to immerse this in water? It's not, if it never immerse it when it's plugged in, right? That much you guys know. Like you don't. Oh, I'll plug it in and stick it in. No. Okay, that guy's not. Hopefully, right? Does anything happen right away if you plug? If nothing's plugged in, can anything? No one's going to get hurt. Right? What's the problem, though?
The water
will seep in. And if the waters are touching on the wires inside and you plug it in when there's water there, what will happen? It will probably short out and might destroy your sandwich maker. So what do I do? I let it dry. Depending if it's the winter or if it's the summer. If it's the summer, I wait a couple of days. If it's the winter, I might wait a little bit longer. I let it dry. And I've done this a few times. I've never had a problem. I take no responsibility. Don't take a very expensive electrical appliance, you know, your George Foreman something or another, and you immerse it in the water, and then you take it out, and then you plug it in, and it blows the whole thing, and there goes hundreds of dollars down the drain. I'm just telling you that's an option if you're willing to run the risk of doing it. But you have to really, really let it dry. And as they claim, it says if it voids the warranty, it voids the warranty. If you have some problem later on, you won't be able to have the warranty. But I've done in the past, usually not with expensive items, usually just with sandwich makers, etc., which aren't, I tell you, buy the cheaper ones. So they're not so expensive. And that is something that can be done. In general, there may be some other appliances, like if you have some sort of KitchenAid device. So very often, the only thing that comes in contact with the food is that removable glass thing with the metal blade at the bottom or whatever it is. So if that's the only thing, you don't have to take the whole machine and stick it into the water, right? It's only the part that comes into contact with the food. But that is a problem with certain things. So you have, again, as a summary, you have three different opinions. There are those who say if it doesn't serve any purpose when it's not plugged in, so then it doesn't need any tefillah. There are those who say dismantle it and put it together by a Jew, and then you have the crazy people who insert it into the mikveh. Yeah.
Does the same apply to a microwave oven, hot plate?
So a microwave oven generally isn't a problem because, assuming that on the microwave, it depends what it is. If on the microwave there is a glass thing at the bottom, and the only thing that comes into direct contact with the food is that glass thing, then that's the only thing that requires tevila. If you have an oven at home, a wall oven, a regular oven at home, generally the only thing that might come into contact with the food are the metal grates, which are removable. And that's the only thing that requires, like on a barbecue, you just have to tovel the grates that are there. The other thing that you asked about was?
Hot plate.
So on a plata, on a hot plate, generally what comes into contact, direct contact with the food? Not the hot plate.
Yeah, but it's just the pot.
What?
Your noodles on.
Correct. Sometimes people put things, like if people take a potato and stick it straight onto the glass thing, if you don't use a plate. But if you never ever did it, like if it was always meant to, so it shouldn't, in theory, it shouldn't be a problem. Yeah.
I once heard this, I don't know if it's true, but that like you can, if someone else did tovel your kelim.
So let's get to it. Let's move on a little bit. Hold off on the questions. I want to cover a number of issues. So if you have questions, write them down. Hopefully we'll cover them. And if not, hopefully at the end. Somebody asked earlier about kelim chad pa'amiyim, right? Which are disposable utensils, like a standard aluminum pan, right? One-time use. So Moshe has the following opinion. That's in source number 10. And in source number 11, he quotes the Minchatz Yitzchak, which is slightly different. Moshe's opinion is that only kelim which are meant to be permanent are required tevila, and therefore disposable ones do not require tevila. And Moshe was quite lenient, because he said if the kli is only used two or three times, and won't last more than two or three times, you don't have to tovel the kli. You'll ask me two or three, and I said, Moshe said two or three. I don't know, he didn't have exact number. However, sometimes people buy these disposable pans, and what do? They use them, and they keep using them and using them. Just because it's sold as disposable, if you're going to use it according to emotion more than two or three times, then it requires tevila. According to the Minchat Yitzchak, which is in source number 11, he says one time. He says, using it once, it doesn't require tevila. If you're going to use it more than once, then requires to. But there's something very important, and people make a mistake. People think that this means that you can use a kli one time before you tovel it. That's incorrect. A kli that's designed to be used only one time and is used only one time doesn't require tevila. A kli that's designed to be used for many times, or I'm planning to use it for many times, requires tevila even before the first time. You understand the difference? If it's a disposable pan that I'm using only once, doesn't require tevila. If it's something that I'm planning to use many times, then it requires tevila before the first time. Now, in some stores in Israel, depending on where they are, you can buy many different places, there are aluminum pans that has a hashgacha on it. It says, Badat Seidah Haredis. So you can eat the pan. What in the world does the hashgacha tell you? So it tells you two things. First of all, it tells you that there was no greasy substance or something. Years ago in America, there was a big problem. They found out that some of this, not the disposable ones, some of the real steel pots and pans that were being made in America, as part of the finishing things, they used to put a thin layer of lard on them because it smoothed out the process. And they discovered this, and there was a whole big to-do that some of the major steel companies were doing this. So one thing is with aluminum pans, there's no, the chas v'shalom, there shouldn't be any, they don't coat it with anything that's not kosher. The second thing is that it doesn't require tevila. Why? Because it was made by Jews. And therefore it's not a problem. Now, that, if it comes with, if it has hashgacha of the Badatze, the Haredis, I once called them up, and they told me, no, you don't have to tovel it. Number of months later, a year later, somebody told me, you're crazy, you're wrong, you have to tovel it. So I called them up a second time, and they told me, no, you don't have to tovel it. So I called twice already. I don't think I have to call more. But that's an advantage if you want to reuse your aluminum pans. If it comes with the hashgacha on it, so then it doesn't require tefillah. If you stand by pans, so again, if you're planning to use them once, it doesn't require. If you're not going to use them more than two or three times because they don't last, according to Rav Moshe, you don't have to tefillah it. But if you're going to possibly reuse them often, then you have to require tefillah even before the first time. Okay, a little bit about how you do tefillah. In source number 12, okay, I'm not reading some of the sources inside, but the whole kli needs to be, well, there's a difference between kashering and toveling. First of all, don't get confused. Right, if a kli was used with tray food, it needs to be kasher. If a kli was used with chametz and you want to use it on Pesach, it needs to be kashered. Irrelevant of a Jewish, non-Jewish, etc. There's toveling. A brand new kli, never used with food before, that was made by a non-Jew, needs to be toveled. Now there's another difference between kashering and toveling. Kashering can be done in sections. I can kasher the left side and then the right side. I can kasher the top and then kasher the bottom. Toveling is like people. If a person immerses in the mikveh and keeps their right hand out of the mikveh, and then tovels again and keeps their left hand out of the mikveh with their right hand back in, does it work? No. Toveling has to be done all at once. The entire kli. You can't do it in sections. Now that creates a little bit of a problem. Because when I'm toveling something in the mikveh, so, and I have it and I'm holding on to it, and I immerse it, what's the problem if I'm holding on tightly? Right where my fingers are pressing very tightly, what's the problem? I'm covering the water, may not get there. So I can't go like this and then turn it upside down and go like that. Because, so what you have to do, water has a certain degree of buoyancy. And therefore, if you're very quick, how long does it have to be totally immersed?
Split second.
Split second. So if I, right, with a certain amount of buoyancy, I let go for a fraction of a second, and I can do that. I once lost one of my mother's knives. She wasn't happy. I didn't catch it quite fast enough. It was the only time I ever lost something in the mikveh. By the way, if you take a look at the bottom of the ketel of mikveh, you can see there's a lot of stuff there. What? What are you going to do? Okay, give my bathing suit into the mikveh. Whoa, yay, okay. So some ketel of mikveh have a net.
Yes. Are you allowed to have somebody have their hands underneath?
Yes, somebody could catch it, right. Okay.
Are sour baskets okay?
Like what?
If you're not, like most mikvahs, like for Caleb, have like, you're still like
so. Right, so they have baskets. The only thing is that the holes in the baskets have to be, I don't know the exact size, but they have to be sufficiently large. And a very thin knife could fall through the holes. Like a pot's not going to fall through the hole. But. Okay. Source number 13. Not only does the once you have to tovel the kli, you also have to tovel the handle. What can't you say about the handle? I might have said I don't have to tovel the handle. Why not? Well, either because it's plastic or even if it's metal. What? Doesn't come into contact with the food. It doesn't matter. If it's the kli, once the kli needs toveling, what part of the kli needs toveling? Everything. In source number 14, What? It says tzarich lahat bil yad akli, the handle. Right below that, in the second part of source 13, tzarich lahavir hachulda kodem atfila. What is chulda? Chalada is rust. Very important din about tefillah. Before you tovel it, what do you have to make sure? It is perfectly clean. It is perfectly clean, and therefore, can I borrow that mug again? See this mug. Has on the bottom
a sticker.
And therefore, before I tovel it, what do I have to do? I have to remove the sticker. Again, the mug we saw was machloket. But I have to take off the sticker. And that's something you should take care of ahead of time. Sometimes the sticker leaves behind that gluey, yucky stuff. So if it's gluey, yucky stuff that you don't want there, And what do you have to do? You have to remove it. Do I have to remove the paint? No, because I want the paint. Can I write my name on it before I tovel it?
Yeah.
Yes, because I want my name on it. If I have a very expensive glass dish from Tiffany's, Tiffany's I think is a famous glass, right?
Yeah.
I want everybody to know that this glass dish came from Tiffany's. Do I have to take off the sticker?
No.
No. Why not? Because I want to keep it there permanently. Right. If on the other hand I have a glass dish that says $1.99 on it, so then I maybe want to take it off. Very few people want everybody to know they spent $1.99 on the. And if you have a, and if it says on it Tiffany's and $1.99, so something's wrong. The guy in the street corner assured me that it was made from Tiffany's. Okay, there's a bracha on source number 14. There's a bracha that's recited when you tovel it. And the bracha is, if you see Yevarech al tvilat kli, you know, Yevarech, comma, al tvilat kli. What does that mean? The bracha is, Baruch Adah Hashem al-Kedem al-Cholam al-Sheket al-Sham al-Tzivanu, al tvilat kli.
Oh, actually.
What if you have more than one? So he continues. Ve'imem shnayim oyotem Yevarech al Tvilat Kalim. So it's either Al Tvilat Kli for one or Al Tvilat Kalim for two or more. There's actually a machloket about this in source number 15. The Aruch HaShulchan writes that you should always, he says that the minhag is to always say Al Tvilat Kalim, even if you have only one. So the two different customs, some say, everyone agrees for two or more it's Al Tvilat Kalim. For one, some say you turn it into the singular, and some say no, you can leave the plural. Yeshno gimkacha, v'yeshno gimkacha. Either one is acceptable. Let's flip the page. Source number 16. Although food cooked or stored in a utensil that still required tefillah may not be eaten from that utensil, it may be eaten if transferred to utensil which has undergone tefillah. What does he say? A non-toveled pot doesn't make the food treif. What do I mean? I'm not allowed to cook in a non-toveled pot. I cooked it in a non-toveled pot. I shouldn't have, but I did. Can I eat the food?
Yeah.
The food is 100% kosher. You're not supposed to use, you're not supposed to use the kli, but if it was used, me, somebody else, it was cooked in a non-toveled pot, the food is 100% kosher and can be eaten. And now this brings us to the following sometimes difficult scenario. My parents keep a kosher kitchen. There's milchiks, there's fleishiks, there's this, there's that. They don't know about tefillas kelim. No one ever explained it to them. They don't know about it. They think it's some sort of chumrah. The kelim in my house are kosher, but they're not tova. So you tell me, okay, it doesn't make the food treif. Yeah, but what am I supposed to do when I want to use a knife and fork? What am I supposed to do if I want to make pasta in my house? The kelim are not tovel. So what am I supposed to do? And it's a very common question. So what's going to happen? So there's an interesting halacha. The halacha is, if you take a look, maybe we'll skip to source number 18. Rav Aaron Lichtenstein delivered a shiur to Shiva Aratzion, etc., cited the opinion of Yossi Dov Soloveitchik, who ruled that a guest is not the halachic equivalent of a shoel. Somebody who borrows a kli is required to tovel it, but a guest who borrows, who uses a kli in somebody's house, is not obligated to immerse the kli. What does this mean? It means as follows. Chazal want us to tovel kelim. Well, the Torah wants us to tovel kelim. Chazal came along and said, because you have to be tovel, you have to tovel the kli, what are we telling you? You have to tovel the kli. That's what the Torah says. What did the Chacham come along and say? Until you do what you're supposed to do, finish the sentence. Until you do what you're supposed to do,
no,
you can't use it. The Torah says you have to tovel it. The Chacham came along and says, until you do what you're supposed to do, you can't use it. When I borrow a kli, I'm a shoal, I have certain kinyanim on the kli. But when I'm a guest in someone's house, I have no kinyan, I have no rights at all over the kli. Because I have no rights over the kli, I have no obligation to tova the kli. And because I have no obligation to tova the kli, and it's not my obligation, therefore, the prohibition midarabanan of using the kli before I do what I'm supposed to do doesn't apply to me. Why not? Because it's not mine to do. I'm just a guest. It's not mine. It's the owner's. It's his problem. So my host can't use his silverware if it wasn't tovel. But me, I'm a guest, I can use the silverware. He's not supposed to, but I can use the silverware. What? So I heard from Rav Aaron Soloveitchik's son. Where's Rina? Is Rina here? Yeah. So Rav Chaim Soloveitchik. So I heard from Rav Aaron Soloveitchik's son, told me many years ago, that his father paskened halacha lemaisa. Somebody came to him, a student whose parents were, they kept the kosher kitchen, but the kelim weren't over. So he told him, halacha lemaisa, he says, they're not your kelim. They're your parents' kelim. Your parents can't use them, but you can. Parents can't use them, you can. Whether or not it's a good idea to tell your parents that they can't use the kelim or not, so that depends on the situation and everything can be discussed. But in a practical first level, you happen to know that your parents haven't told of the kelim in your house, you can use them. What should you do? Should you tell your parents to be told of the kelim? That depends on certain situations. Maybe you go back for Pesach, maybe you go back at the end of the year, maybe a discussion will come up, maybe you'll find out. I had one student whose parents went away on a 3-day vacation, and not my recommendation, the person just told me. She took all the kelim in the house and went to the local kelim mikveh, spent a good portion of 3 days toveling all the kelim.
There are services that go into your house until 11 a.m.
Well, you need a mikveh, so unless you have one in your house.
I know, they pick it up in a car.
They could. But the problem with this, by the way, is, I mean, I'm sure that you all keep a clean kitchen, but if you're toveling a used pot, you have to scrub it very hard before you tovel it. Anything that's a permanent stain is permanent. That's not a problem. But even pots that are cleaned and scrubbed, if you could scrub it a little bit more and get off some more of the dirt, then before you tovel it, what do you have to do? You have to scrub it a little bit more and get off more of the dirt. So whatever could come off, in theory, has to come off. So it's a bit of a pain, so to speak, to tovel used kelim, because you have to make sure that they're very, very clean. I'm not recommending that you go behind your parents' back, but I'm just telling you that halacha lemaisa, if you find yourself in a situation where you are not the owner and you're not the official borrower, right, of the kelim, so then it's not your requirement to tovel it, and therefore the gzeira midrabanan that you can't use it until the tefillah doesn't apply to you. Take some questions. Yeah.
The crates that everyone uses.
What?
Like the crates that people use to put like
kelim in. And the baskets or something.
Like, isn't that not throwing like the side of the thing? Like,
mm-hmm. It's not a kli seuda. It's not meant to help prepare food or use food during the seuda.
No,
Oh, you're worried that the water won't get to. No, the buoyancy of the water, unless it's very heavily laden down. Like if you were to take like 100 pieces of silverware and stick it all in, then the water won't get to everywhere. But otherwise, the buoyancy of the water will create a little bit of space
also,
for the water to get through.
I just
a yellow,
yeah.
It matters where it was made.
Okay.
And you should be aware of many, 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 maybe even most of the kelim that you'll buy here in Eretz Yisrael are not made in Eretz Yisrael. Sometimes they are, but a lot of stuff is like a lot of stuff all over the world is made in China and elsewhere. So you cannot assume that something that's bought in Israel was made by Jews in Israel. And if it was made in China, you cannot assume that it was made by Jews.
Second question is, what about Pyrex? Like,
So Pyrex is also, if I remember correctly, I think Rav Moshe writes to Tovel Pyrex without a bracha, if I remember correctly. Yes.
If you're doing some for Shabbos and you give someone like a dish or some sort of platter, should you Tovel beforehand?
No. It's a big discussion. I'm telling you no, because it's also something that you live and learn. I didn't know this till more recently than longer ago. Is that if you're not using the object at all, it's not yours, and you're planning to give it away, so for you, it's not a kli se'uda. It's not a kli used for meals. For you, it's a kli matana. And therefore, it doesn't yet require tevila. And therefore, it doesn't, according to some, it's a big problem. It doesn't really help. You shouldn't tell, it doesn't solve the problem. So, you...
You shouldn't tell them before.
You have to tell them, and you can say, listen, it's not Tovel. It has to be Tovel. Yeah, who's, I see a hand, but I don't see a face. Judy, yeah, okay.
I totally don't remember my question.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, but the potato peel is edible. Not everybody always peels off the entire potato, etc. So.
Also, if you already throw well the pan with a plastic handle, put it into a long handle, should you take it back and throw it again?
Yes. Probably without a bracha, but yeah.
What about sterling silver?
That's silver. That's metal. Yeah.
What about things that are only used for raw food, like you have knives, especially for raw meat?
Yeah, so there's a question the Pesukim talk about, a shechita knife.
Yeah.
Shechita knife. So I think the maskan, if I remember correctly, the Pesukim is to tovel it without a bracha.
And also, what about like a can opener? It's not just
a can opener that's not meant to come into contact with food, so does not require tevila, even if it happens to touch the food. Because that's not what it's designed for. That's not what it's meant for. Occasionally, you open up a can and it sometimes touches it, so it doesn't require tefillah. Yeah.
When do you say the bracha before you put it in?
Yes, you say the bracha just when you're ready, over la siyata, just before you're ready to immerse it in the mikvah. You've removed all the stickers and all the glue and all the thing, and you're about to put it in. You say the bracha. One bracha works for many, many kalim, but it's preferable not to be mafsik in between. So if you're toveling 20 things, so once you say the bracha, certainly between the bracha and the first kli, you can't talk at all. And it's preferable not to talk until you finish toveling all the items. Yes?
I might be making this up, but I've heard that like, you're supposed to wet your hands in the water and make the bracha.
The idea of wetting your hands is that if your hands are somewhat damp and you're holding on to the object and you hold it a little bit loose because your hands are damp, and then the water will seep in between. And therefore, you don't have to...
It doesn't have to do with the bracha.
No. It has to do. Yeah.
Based on Kaya's question, if you're giving a platter with something on it, should you talk about it first?
You're going to eat it. There's a whole question amongst the poskim in the following situation. I go into the store and I buy a glass jar of apple juice. So do I have to come home, empty the apple juice, take the jar to the mikveh, go tovel it, and then come back? So most poskim say that's not necessary. If I want to reuse the jar, then it is. There are different reasons why it's not so necessary. In the situation where you're buying a candy dish, so if it's sold that way, right? If it's sold that way, then, no, it's a bit of a problem. I believe neither. I have to get back to you on that. So, believe neither, I will remind me.
I thought you told her not, you don't tovel.
No, I told her she shouldn't tovel it. The question is, but if you want to, what happens if you want to use it on Shabbos? There's one thing, I'm giving somebody a dish. I'm giving him a dish, so I'll let them tovel it. But Molly's question, if I understand correctly, is no, you want, that's going to be served for dessert. You can have the candies on the dish, and it's either going to use it at the table. So now what do you do? So,
but
they are. That it's designed. So, Belina, they have to get back to you on that. Okay, yeah.
Just clarifying. So, Spassini said it was you said to turbo dodge in with a handle, but
Right, but no. See, once I have to tovel a kli, because some of it comes into contact with food, if it's all one unit, I have to tovel the whole unit. If it's something that comes out, right, that's dismantled, then I... Okay, we'll stop here. If there are any more questions, you can come. If you didn't sign in on the sheet...